What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is August 13th. And after a brief hiatus among the Alps, I have returned and I thought, man, I just need to talk about pitching for what's coming in the second half, but really just kind of planning for 2026. Like, we're starting to get the idea of the guys who are showing us things. What could they show us more that make us more excited? And, you know, who better than going to The Athletic and saying, hey, is DVR available? No? Well, now I'll try Eno Saris.
Thanks for that.
Good to see you, Eno.
Good to see you, too. Could have stayed in Austria. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. I sent Eno a photo or two of, like, I went to Stiegel Brewery. I was like, oh, man, look at this, Eno. You should have done a live podcast here. That would have been great. But how you been, man? What have you been working on? What kind of stuff have I missed over the past 10 days?
Oh, I did like a piece on how Nate Eovaldi's been doing it. And, you know, of course, it posted the day that he had like the worst start of the season. I mean, the thing that's uncomfortable about doing pieces like that is, like, you know, there's obviously the statistical part of it where I could be like, hey, of course, regression is coming. And maybe I should have put in a line about that, but it's just not that much fun because the idea of the piece is like, what's changed? And, like, you know, what's different? Like, how's he doing this? You know?
Right.
And so I highlighted that his curve is different this year. He's leaning into it. He's really dialed down the fastball usage. Also, there's something that's hiding that, I was proud of myself for figuring out, is that he's throwing a sinker. It's just not being captured by the machines. But he's throwing a sinker, dialed down the four seam usage, changed the curveball. So there's definitely some things that he's doing that are good. And there's obviously also some regression coming for him. So I wrote about that. And, you know, I've got a piece coming about IVB where we're just, it's a little bit funny because for our listeners, it may not have too much news.
Well, sure. Right. But still, when we talk about Vern IVB, there's a lot of confusion about what it means and how to interpret it.
And right. So we tried to explain some of that. And then we got for the piece, and Dennis Lynn and Chad Jennings did a lot of the heavy lifting.
Oh, that's great.
They got Josh Kalk on the record. I think it's the first time I've ever seen him on the record. So Josh Kalk is a secret genius who was part of developing the entire Tampa Bay Rays pitching development program, and then left for the Twins, and is now the Twins pitching development guy. I think he's an AGM at this point, but and when he was out in the public, he was writing for the Harbaugh Times. He wrote something called the Injury Zone Finder, which I think to some extent people still follow, which is using change in release points and velocity and zone rates to spot injury before, you know, it's too late.
Yeah.
So he did some cool stuff in the public sector and wrote in the blogosphere, and then is now the AGM of the Twins. So so we got some cool people to chime in on Vert and what's going on and where it's gone and what it means now. So
that's awesome.
That's coming out soon. And then I've got probably my last set of rankings I'm trying to put together that'll come out on Friday, so we can go ranking to ranking next week, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So just to let you guys know, when it comes to doing the list at the end of the year, I hate it because it's so dependent on schedule. And I actually shift.
And I don't even really look at that.
To just groups of like, yeah, just start them. And I just say like a sit and start for the rest of the month is what I do.
Yeah, that's going to be, it's such a bear. I think it's a little bit easier for you maybe where you keep it weekly. So you have, and you said you have like basically a schedule report that's like given to you.
Well, no, all it is, it's not even like a ranking. It's like, I just put them into groups of like, you're going to start this, shut up, move on. And then you have like, okay, a couple of these you're going to go for, you know, and so on. Like it's just so annoying.
But I am making the leap finally and copying from you.
Oh, you are?
I'm taking the injured guys out.
Yeah, Zito!
I just want to, I wanted to do it now where it was like lower stakes. And then I could see from the commenters like what they preferred. And what I'm also doing is, and I don't know if you do this, I'm taking the minor league guys out.
Oh, I never had minor league guys in there.
You just don't even have. So they have to be in the big leagues.
They have to be starting this week.
Oh, okay.
Because I do it once a week, right? I mean, yeah. If they're in the rotation, it's like a 5-day week and they're going to go, they're still in it, then fine. But if they're not in a rotation, they're not in unless they're confirmed to return this week.
Yeah. And so right now I'm in the process of pulling them out and I'm trying to decide what kind of information I will include with the injured and minor leaguers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking when I have minor league stuff plus, I think I want to keep it really simple. Just maybe for the major leaguers, projected return date and rank if fully healthy.
Yeah, that's really tough. So I did actually. Okay, that's great. I just put what injury they have, and then relative rank when they're normal. And
because projected injury date, they don't always give you that.
The thing is, you change it so often.
Yeah.
And so I found myself every week spending so long updating the projected return. I'm not doing this, guys. This is too much work. When it comes to minor leaguers, I think I don't do the best job of the stash list for it. We have a really good prospect writer doing the top 10 pitchers to stash and redraft leagues. And I always take a look at that one as well. But it's so annoying because suddenly guys that you don't expect to be promoted are just there. And it's okay. I used to even have a thing. I don't talk about prospects until they make a start in the first place. So I don't know.
Yeah, for the minor leaguers, a lot of them have pitched in AAA. Mm-hmm. So I think people would be interested in a AAA Stuff Plus, which is they have to go all the way to my Google Doc to find that.
Okay.
So if I could just pull that out, I think maybe rank if in the big leagues plus my AAA Stuff Plus might just be the two.
Yeah, that just honestly.
And you've inspired me. I won't do projected return day because I don't know what it is.
There's no way.
I think maybe what I'll do is last injury note.
Yeah, just
shut down for 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah, throwing but even bullpens, that you have to pay every time, and it's just the worst, man.
Throwing bullpens. Well, I don't do it weekly, so you know, just a note, point. And they can see, he's throwing bullpens. Maybe I'm into it, you know.
Yeah, sure. So a couple other things here. One, you mentioned the Eovaldi thing. I like putting a thing out on the same day. There's a to me, it's one of my funniest articles ever. It was on June 21st, 2018. I put out an article called Pitcher Spotlight. This is on Rotographs. Chad Kuhl may have figured it out.
Oh, nice.
And I did this whole thing and it was great about look, he's added a slider now. Look at the slider. It does great. This is also 2018 when adding a slider and throwing it 40% of the time or something, like 30% is whoa, that's a weird thing. And so I said, I literally wrote at the end of it, I think it is, I'm literally posting this, publishing this an hour before his start goes, because I'm that confident. He left that game after two innings and got Tommy John surgery. That was it. It's just, all right. First comment is, baseball gods weren't going to let this go unpunished.
Hubris.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, I just think about that constantly. And it's the hardest thing that we do, especially if you're writing about hitters, because they go every day. So when do you update the data of them? You know, you have to save it for that day, especially doing research on them. With pitchers, you just got to make sure they don't start the day you do it.
Oh,
you know?
And the way that our rankings work now, we have a visuals team that's working on visuals for it. And we have an engineering team that's working on the engineering of the actual rankings, the way that it comes out. So it's a week long process. And so I have to create the spreadsheet at some point. So there has to be a moment where I'm just stats through Wednesday for a Friday. And that's not ideal, but I got to be looking at something. I can't be and I got to, do all the spreadsheet work again. I got to stop doing the spreadsheet work and do the ranking at some point. So, I have to tell you that I think the actual process of ranking will be a lot easier without these injured players in it.
Oh, it's so much better.
The injured now players, I'm just looking at who's actually playing. I don't have to worry about what do I think? Where do I think Chris Sale should go?
Well, the thing is, Chris Sale is just stashed everywhere, so it doesn't matter, kind of.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. What am I going to put him in there? Yeah, or he's on the waiver wires because nobody has an IL slot. But either way, what is my ranking going to help them decide?
And all you're saying is okay, cool. When it's healthy, it's this. So then you decide if that's worth it. to stash it now or not, you know?
Yeah.
So, and the last thing I do want to say is that you were mentioning that the assistant GM of the Twins now is someone that, you know, has revolutionized how we think about pitching and the analysis of it. I remember actually you talking about Joe Ryan being like, they've kind of figured something out with it. And that was really before we moved forward with VAA and really became that became a public thing. And now we know that he has essentially the flattest four seamer in baseball. And now I'm thinking, oh man, Mick Abel, guys, they had to go and get Mick Abel in the Duran deal. And I've been a huge fan of Mick Abel. I'm still upset at them that they just threw Travis Adams out there against the Yankees last night for like two innings and four runs or whatever. I'm like, just get Abel in there. And this leads me to, I think the topic we're talking about really is, who are the guys that we have our close eye on now that we feel are going to be ranked differently than we are doing these rest of season ranks now come February of next year. And for me, Mick Abel is someone I am circling to watch a lot in spring training. I hope he has a spot out of camp. Same with his teammate, Zebby Matthews. I think both of those guys are just primed to dominate in Minnesota. And I'm curious to hear some of the guys you have on your mind of like, okay, I know it's a little too early right now, but I feel like next year is that year where they really take that step.
Yeah, I mean, I love Mick Abel. And I think, you know, it's interesting to circle organizations because, you know, you're talking about a park and you're talking about coaches. And I just really feel like, you know, it's hard to keep an eye on like exactly like who has the best player development program and who has the best coaches. Right. It's not, they're always like teams are always trying to improve that. And so you can't like do the Dodgers. Like the Dodgers for a long time.
Ages, I don't think they do.
But people thought they did for a while.
Because this is the tough part is like, because a pitcher is successful, does that mean the organization is successful? And the sample size we have is so small every time. So I remember when it was the Giants, when they got like Alex Wood and Anthony Descafani in the same year doing really well. And it was Logan Webb's breakout year. It was like, oh, the Giants are the amazing pitching development people. It's like, well, no.
They just have a nice you
took some lottery tickets. They came through. And also you had Kai Correa there who made the defense better.
Defense really good. Yeah.
And true. So it's like those things are what, you know, you can't just say it's three guys and then all of a sudden like, great, they are now good at this. Some teams are good at developing certain things, you know?
And then there's like the hype machine. It's like, do we know that the Mets are good at this or are we praying? Are we falling to the hype machine? You know, so the Mets are the one I want to circle like the Twins because.
So you might want to read Eric Smolski's article. So he was mentioning the stuff about the pitching lab on the On the Corner podcast and saying that essentially the Mets have a classroom session every week where they all exchange ideas with each other.
Just in terms of personnel.
Amazing.
The people they've hired. I'm like mind blown. Like they have one of the best dudes in biomechanics that's out there. They hired him. They one of the guys I would have hired out of Driveline. They hired him. Like they've got a really great group of minds. And I think that they're being really smart about how they're doing it. And they obviously have, I think that they pretty obviously have a stuff plus that's similar to mine. You know, I know that like, for example, the Cubs are doing pretty well with Cade Horton, who Stuff Plus doesn't like, K-1SBB doesn't like. And this is not the first time that I've basically heard through channels that like the Cubs have a different Stuff Plus than I do. Now, how do I react to that as an analyst where it's like, I gave them like a C for the what they did at the trade deadline. And we were trying to give Jed Hoyer a grade. And I was like, I can't give Jed Hoyer like an A for the lineup. And like a D for the rotation, like honestly. Like,
well, okay, so
he's had Steele, you know, they've had Cut Ride. Cut Ride was like, you know, that was an innovation that they kind of did. And then Cade Horton is outperforming my model. So is that my subjectivity where I'm now like I'm not giving the Cubs enough credit and I'm not giving Cade Horton enough credit. So Cade Horton is someone I want to watch. Is this just catnip for the Mets being like, oh, they have my Stuff Plus. So when I look at all of their minor leaguers and Stuff Plus, I'm like, oh, Nolan McClain, stud. Brandon Sproat, stud. Blake Tidwell, stud.
Wait, no, Giants, Giants. Giants.
No, you can't do that. He was developed by the Mets. That's another thing. They change organizations. They change coaches.
They're changing players,
you know, on their own. So they go to Drivelay, they go to Tread. Like, we can't really know it. But I do find it fascinating that, like, when I look through the lens of Stuff Plus, the Mets seem to be, like, at least coaching to Stuff Plus. At least, like, they value similar things that I value. And I feel very bullish about Brandon Sproat and Nolan McLean and even Tidwell, even going over to San Francisco. Tidwell now gets to land in a nice home park, you know, but he probably had the worst command.
I didn't even have him on my list, but yeah, he's certainly someone that if he finds his way into the rotation, which he does have some competition with, but.
And you wanted to talk about what to watch for. I think with Tidwell, it's pretty obvious. I think he's just watching for command because the stuff's pretty good, but it's like, he hasn't really shown major league starting rotation command yet. So you just want to, you want it to be better than Birdsong.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh man. I mean, I'll be honest. I hate this. I hate that there's any sort of emotion tied to players. And I say this constantly. I just want every pitcher to be dope. But the number of times that I got yelled at because I was down on Birdsong because my guys, he doesn't know where it's going. It's like, what? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. You know, I'm like, you know, there is some feeling.
It's probably going to eventually matter.
but I really wanted that one to work out. And the one thing I did want to go to, you just kind of gave me this whole thought. You know how this goes. You get some sort of idea in a moment. You just kind of go on that.
We barely have a rundown. Yes, I know.
Yeah, of course. Guys, this is the beauty of it. It's supposed to be like First Pitch Arizona, where we're just in the hallway and we spend like 2 hours just like,
what about this?
You should go to First Pitch Arizona, by the way. You can talk to us. It's the best. It's just hang out with us the entire night. It's awesome. No, with the Cubs Stuff Plus being different, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about this a lot now. The Cubs have a fantastic offense. And you labeled it as like, what's the great for the offense? What's the great for the pitching? But there's another element, which is the defense. And theoretically, you could craft a Stuff Plus that is essentially rooted in getting weaker contact for your defense to do better than others. Right? Like,
which I think is sort of what the Dodgers were good at for a while.
Right.
They've had the best BABIP forever.
Like the 206 BABIP, like with Gonsolin, right? And I'm thinking about it. We were saying like Cut Ride, right? Like with Justin Steele, with Cade Horton now, there's a third guy that I can't remember now who also had it. But with Cade Horton having that cut action on it does play into this elite infield defense for them. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's kind of where that goes of saying, hey, cool, this is what team we have. Let's make a model that is optimized for that. Because if you have like the best defense in the league, you really don't want to go for the three true outcome guys. You know, even though it's like the OPS statement or whatever.
Well, undervalued then, right?
Right.
But if you're the Yankees and you've got that defense, like you kind of want calls for
Well, sure. Absolutely. You want to play to your team's strengths in ways. So I can fathom it that way of saying, hey, cool, we are going to favor more of the weak contact side versus the whiff side, which I'm not saying I agree with, but I can understand an approach in that way, which is kind of fun to think about. But okay, I pulled it all.
What do you think about just to stay on them for a second? Is, you know, what do you think about Cade Horton? Like, what do you want to see from Cade Horton? Like, the strikeout, the top level stuff is not that kind to him. I had somebody I was discussing on Rates and Barrels, like, you know, whether or not they should have traded for Zach Gallen and whether, you know, I would start in a third playoff start. Would it be Cade Horton or Zach Gallen? And someone who's like, what? Like, obviously Cade Horton. And I'm like, I guess. But, you know, if you look at things that are normally predictive, like K-minus BB, Sierra, Stuff Plus, you know, these different, like these, the predictive tools we have, you know, Gallen and Horton are a toss up.
And also,
Horton strikes out 18% of the guys he faces and walks 8%. That's a below average K-minus BB. It's a 4.5 Sierra. You know, there are reasons to be worried, but he also is succeeding. So and he has like four straight scoreless starts. Like,
yeah, what's going on? Helps a ton. I mean, obviously the matchups do too. And I think actually Keen Horn's about to regress massively because it's a really tough schedule. Now he goes to Toronto. I believe it's even today on Wednesday. But if you're watching live, you see it live right now. You don't have to wait till Thursday to hear this. I do want to mention though about Gallant versus Horton. I know it sounds really weird and I hate saying just veteran experience versus rookie, but being in the lights of playoff baseball, the one thing we talk about is, I have this term, the shag rug, which is the young man's floor, which is essentially that rookies are more volatile because they don't know how to adjust when things don't go well. And I will say what veteran experience usually does is it eliminates most of the time the floor, there's lava scenarios, right? The big clunkers. And in the playoffs, you're not necessarily trying to go like one run. You're trying to prevent those blow up starts to make it so that you get to their pen. You get to see your batters, to see the same relievers again, to tire them out. You know, you want to be able to grind every single game. You want it not to be a blowout, essentially, to give yourself the best chance. And you don't necessarily want to have that volatile starter. You want to have that Zach Eflin. You know,
that's what I was kind of getting to. I was like, well, you know, let's say you like Quade Horton better than Zach Gallen. I think it's close enough on talent that I could take the veteran. That's sort of where I ended in the argument. But they were, you know, fairly sure that I was up my own butt on that one. But, you know, it's funny is Gallen's had like a couple good starts since then. And Horton's been great, but Gallen's been okay, too. With Horton, in terms of like what I want to see, one thing that I've seen most recently is just a broadening of the pitch mix.
Yeah.
So he's been throwing more sinkers and the curve has been adding more drop. So, you know, I would like to see him reduce the four seam usage. I would like to see that go down to 45%. I'd like to see 10% sinkers, 15% sliders, 10% curves, 10%. I would like to see like a wider mix, maybe even down more on the fastball and up on more on the secondaries, because his breaking balls are good.
Yeah.
And it might be enough to be like, hey, he has elite breaking balls and he's figuring out the constellation around him. Like there's a lot of guys who have that, you know, Sonny Gray,
right.
You know,
so,
you know, has had a great one thing
that, that David Cone always say, and I like wanted to do well, but I couldn't because we have limitations and now we don't have them. Which is like load times for us to do splits on our player page. And also now I get a, I don't know if you know this, you know, I get a one sheet every day when I do the roundup that gives me all the tables I want and the strike zone plots I want and everything, like all the data I could ever want on every starter. And what it does is it splits out lefties and righties. So David Cone was very much like every pitcher is two pitchers, what they do against lefties and what they do against righties. So when I, when you're talking about kind of the usage stuff, what I'm thinking is, okay, against lefties, I still want him to go four-seamer as his main heater, right?
Right.
I'm actually kind of focused on him locating it better because he's, especially against lefties, I think it's been more of a just in the zone is fine. But that four-seamer should perform well without a cut action on it. And then against right-handers, yeah, favoring a sinker. I don't know if it's that great of a horizontal run sinker. I don't remember, but I feel like it's like
six. I just want him to like have two fastballs against righties, you know.
Absolutely, like that's awesome. Each great other. To me. And he could really play with the four seamer away, honestly, because of the cut action with it, and then play with the sweeper as well, being like, okay, is it going to come off or not? And then he changes that into that curve against lefties, right? And then it's a change up there. So I think that's the tack we're going to see for the most part. And I remember at the beginning too, we thought that Horton had a sweeper and a curve in one pitch that he would just kind of manipulate a little bit, like Justin Steele would. As I wish I could play my soundboard of Justin Steele. But that's, you know, that's kind of the, we're on the same page of just kind of nailing down those approaches for lefty and righty. And then, you know, I saw one game with the changeup being so good to lefties and then it just isn't always there.
Yeah. And by Stuff Plus, it says, you know, we have platoon splits on Tough Stuff Plus.
Yeah.
And it's got an 89 on the change to opposite handed hitters, but it does have a 102 on the curveball.
Right.
So that's why I think maybe the curveball is the way forward, where he basically uses the curveball more against lefties and the slider more against righties.
Yeah, that makes all the sense. But right, as far as ceiling goes, it's not, I don't really see Cade Horton as that ace of a staff, unfortunately. Like, he just doesn't have that massive whiff ability. He's not so wide in the arsenal that it's really massively impressive. Like, I don't really expect him to throw changeups against righties. It's not the greatest changeup ever, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's working now. I think the defense is helping him a bit. But yeah, I'm not absurdly high on Cade Horton for next year. And you probably are going to see him go relatively high. But I think he can turn into like a, almost like a Merrill Kelly type in the future, you know, like maybe. A that just like gets it done for six innings with a good defense behind him. You know,
I'm also interested in just seeing like if his K minus BB kind of changes over time.
Yeah.
If he starts striking more guys out, I become more interested. But like, yeah, the 18% strikeout rate is just not, it's like among qualified starters this year with an 18% strikeout rate. I mean, you're talking about Mitchell Parker, Sagano, you know, these are a little bit worse. Man. Sandy Alcantara, Chris Paddock. I mean, it's hard to find like a stud that I would call a stud down here at all.
Wasn't like Zach Littell right there too?
Yeah. Oh, 17%. I was just just passed over his name. The best pitcher with around an 18 is Clay Holmes, who has a massive sinker, you know?
Yeah. That Adobe has been weathered by the storms.
He's having his own issues. So I'd say Sandy Alcantara and Clay Holmes, the sinker guys that have 18%, but the Horton's not a sinker guy. Soriano's, right. You know, 21%. So the best non-sinker guy down here is Jose Berríos. Oh, no, that's not a terrible comp, right? Because you have a great breaking ball, a fastball mix,
decent
command, and he has bad seasons too. So, like, you can't depend on Jose Berríos every season. So I think maybe that's my comp for Cade Horton.
There you go. I'll never forget asking Eno to heckle me at First Pitch Arizona. He heckled, Jose Berríos is not a Toby.
Yeah.
Yes, he is, Eno.
About that one. Yeah.
Yes, he is. All right. I do want to go back to kind of the young guys and really and thinking more about for next year as well. And there are a lot of those I want to go through. But before we do, we have to take a quick break. So, Eno, how real is Jacob Lopez?
Before three starts ago, I would have said Memorex, like not at all real. I don't believe in it. It's going to go the way of the dodo bird because he throws 91 and does not have any plus pitches by stuff. Plus, what has changed recently is that he has upped the vert on his fastball. He has added a sinker, and that's weird because he's a lefty. You're like, why would that help? I just think that it's a wrinkle. You know, you've talked about this wrinkle pitches, right? It's a wrinkle pitch.
Oh, I don't think I called it that. Maybe
I think that's Trevor. Here. That's Trevor May. Sorry.
Oh,
other,
my God.
Other podcast co-host.
Hear that, Trevor?
But what happened is, now he has three fastballs, and that makes, at least in our model, it makes all the fastballs better. And I think he's always had a pretty good slider. That's taken a leap forward recently too, although I don't know why. Why has the slider gotten better? Slider is slower with, slider is 77? What is the slider?
Yeah, it's 76, 77 last night.
It's gotten bigger recently.
So, yeah, this is, by the way, really good call on the sinker, which has 19 inches of horizontal run. The vert on the four-seamer is, I mean, still 12, which is actually more drop than Corbin Burns' cutter before Tommy Chan.
Yeah, but he's a really low, like, what's his
arming? Yeah, so this is the interesting thing about Jacob Lopez, and this is something that I want to be able to quantify more so that I can identify it and pretty much put a label on these guys. Which is he's very crossbody lefty slinger. So 7.21
degree arm angle
on those four seamers and sinkers. So you throw those two things together and you have a different look than you're used to. It's reminds me a little of like how Chris Sale will be super wide and all of a sudden now you get this big slider that is like 77, 79 or so coming across. And the most intriguing part about his game, it is like the Fratty Pirate, right? Ryan Yarbrough, of teasing, of like, hey, cool, here's my fastballs. Just kidding, it's too far out of the zone, so you really don't want to swing at it. So then I'll throw a cutter now that looks like it's that four seam that you're not supposed to swing at, and then that will come over the plate for a called strike. And I mean, it was a perfect example last night in Sacra Verde in Sacramento of cutters going 83% strikes and four seamers going 52% strikes, right? Of just fastball is not going to be that strike, but then the cutter is. And then you have the slider that they're trying to play this game up top, and then the slider just falls down over the plate, right? It's fun. It's volatile because of the crossbody. And the games that Jacob Lopez has failed has been when he's not able to do that teasing at all. The four-seamer leaks too much over. The cutter leaks too much over. The slider isn't getting down enough.
And generally, the walks are up too.
It's tough to tell when Lopez is going to do this. The famous crossbody guys to me are Adam Ottavino and Jake Arrieta. In the past, it's been a lot of Ryan Walker.
Tarek Skubal used to be more crossbody, but I think one of his biggest improvements has been reducing that.
Nice. So that to me is like, we've seen the stretches where if you have that feel, phenomenal, who cares? You know, just keep going out there. It's great. But it does disappear quickly.
And the one thing that he has over Cade Horton, though, Lopez has 103 strikeouts in 84 innings against 30 walks. Like, at least like some basic, you know, fundamental peripherals are in the positive for him.
And also the schedule is much better moving forward right now than Cade Horton, which is obviously more short term and everything, but it's interesting.
Well, I also wonder how Sacramento, are they going to make adjustments to the park?
Oh gosh.
Like, because it was such a difficult place. Like, if you're thinking about getting Jacob Lopez next year, like, I know that he's been pretty good at home, but you know, I think that every Sacramento pitcher next year is going to get a little bit of a ding because you're not sure how often you're going to use him at home. And you know, his 2.64 ERA at home aside, like, this is more about like, how do we treat all athletics pitchers going forward? And I think that's going to reduce it. So if you take, you know, 90 mile an hour fastball, you know, plus pitches in Sacramento, he may end up being undervalued, but I also got burned by some of these A's pitchers this year, these more peripheral A's pitchers. So I don't know if I'm going to anoint him a big sleeper for next year, but he definitely like him a lot more after the last three or four games than I did before.
Definitely. I don't think I can really jump into it. I mean, JT Ginn had such a cool start the other day of essentially four pitches around different four corners. And it was, oh, this is what's supposed to be. And I'm like, oh, cool. You're probably not going to do that again, but that was so fun. Other guys that I think are spouting up, my gosh, are just kind of appearing and maybe being a little bit different that we should be focusing on. Dustin May yesterday. That was vastly different. I mean, four pitches now, not just going sinker sweeper entirely here. He threw four pitches at least 20% of the time, cutter, four seamer, sinker, sweeper, all of them at least with a 67% strike rate. His arm angle went higher. He had a 1.4 height adjusted VA on his four seamer before this, and then it was a 1.1. It also meant that the velocity went up a full tick, and I feel like that's his more natural arm slot. Then you have the horizontal run on the sinker. It's the same. Oh yes, cool. You have extra velocity. It's the same. You were able to get in the inner half more, May. You were able to get the sweeper away more. The cutter was over the plate and Astros didn't really care. They're like, sure, whatever. That's a strike. It's more encouraging to me a little bit, but do you really feel that there is a path to Dustin May fixing himself here with the Red Sox a little bit and then signing somewhere and picking up where he left off in 2026?
Yeah. I mean, a big part of this, I think, is the similar to what they do with Brian Baio in terms of, let's emphasize the cutter. Let's go with multiple fastballs. The one thing that bothers me, though, is that, yes, like they've raised the arm slot a little bit year over year. Within this year. But year over year, it's been more of a it's been the lower arm slot this year than ever before.
Oh,
so maybe he's rediscovering his old arm slot. That would be probably positive news for me, because I think he has in his core this really extreme sinker slider sideways action that if he can get a little bit higher up, you know, and his arm angle was close to 30 degrees in the last two starts, you know, and that's on the four seam. And, you know, that he was always above 30 degrees before this year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if he can get to that, we've seen a version of Dustin May that had a, like, not a great four seam, but a good four seam and a good cutter to play with that. And once you have that good four seam and cutter, then the sideways stuff works better because you have, you can pop up in the zone. You're not just living at the bottom of the zone and living right. left or right. So I think it's possible, but he is a lot more of a conventional pitcher than when he first came into the big leagues.
Yeah.
You know, he's the sinker sweeper guy right now. And I think that just reduces his upside. So I don't know that, I don't think that he's going to be like a top 40 pitcher for me next year.
So when the Cubs sign him, are you going to change it?
Just to get he has a career 263 BABIP. So he's already.
Right. He is made for them if they keep the same defense and everything. Right. But yeah, that would be an interesting fit there. Unfortunately, the Cubs won't have to give away one of their top prospects for him. Maybe it's a comp pick. No. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't. I do want to go back a little bit to say like Troy Melton, who's kind of a similar thing to the Zebby Matthews situation, maybe a little bit with Mick Abel. Where are you on him? Let's say he does actually have a solidified rotation for the Tigers. Are you circling him as like, guys, this is a dude that you need to be going and drafting everywhere?
Yes. I'm into Troy Melton.
Good. We are into Troy Melton.
Yeah, we're into Troy Melton. The one thing that I like is that, you know, he's got this 36 degree arm angle, which is not super over the top. But then when you look at his fastball, it's got more horizontal and more vertical than you'd expect given his slot. He also comes in with good velo. At what is he at? 96,
97, 96.
Yeah. And so, you know, I like that about him. I like that there's a pretty advanced mix there, where he's throwing the four seam, the slider, 40% slider, 27 sinker, 11 cutter, 9 split, 7 for curve, 5. I like that the model, likes all of his pitches, especially in concert, the way he's using them. So it really looks like a wide mix with good stuff and good command. I don't, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, this is a duh, like this is going to work out.
This is the easy, right? What's even hilarious is that he's actually going literally right now against the White Sox. It's a surprise start. It was looking like it was Troy Melton, then maybe Kadir Montero. And no, it's Melton. He has gone 5 innings with 1 hit, 0 runs, 0 walks, 6 strikeouts on 56 pitches, you know.
I guess what is interesting from a real life baseball as well as a fantasy baseball is just the usage. Like, this is a little bit of a weird thing where just like a pop-up start and he's in the bullpen and you know, I guess he has 75 innings in the minor leagues this year, plus 17 in the majors, plus today. So we're closing in on 100 innings. 2024, he had 100 innings in the minors. And then the year before that, he had 92. So you think maybe he's running out of innings. Maybe they only want to get to 125, you know, 150. I think 150 would be stretching it, right? If he was 100 last year.
I mean, it's to me, it's like, when it comes to before the 120 season, you're up to about 140 at most.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of how I think about it, you know, not really percentage wise. So yeah, 120, 140 is where they want to go probably.
But at the same time, like, you have to think about, this is a team, the Tigers, that like did very little at the deadline.
Yeah.
And, you know, they get Skubal for one more year. They said recently, you know, Scott Harris said recently, I don't believe in windows. So, you know, congratulations, but do windows believe in you? You know, the school is going to be gone, and no matter how good their farm system is there another Skubal coming? Maybe, I don't think it's Melt. I don't. I can't tell you right now. Melton's.
It's Melton. It is Melton.
but so you have to think about, like, is Melton going to be one of our best pitchers going forward after this? So we have to be really careful with him. But we didn't get enough help really at the top of our rotation. Like, what are we rolling out there in a 7-game series?
Yeah.
Like, who's rolling out in games 3 and 4? And if it's Mize and Paddock in games 3 and 4, like, we're going to be using Melton a lot.
Yeah. Right? I would think, so, I mean, yeah, Mize, I think, is locked in for that 3 at the moment.
So then I guess Paddock or Morton, and you can maybe use Paddock, Morton, and Cobb and Gibson Long in, like, short, long ways. Like, you sort of 2-inning, 3-inning and cobble together. They are pitching chaos. They're going to do this, but I think there's going to be a real temptation to use Melton a lot. And, yeah. And even when I think about the bullpen, I'm like, well, I like Vest, and, you know, for what it's worth, I called him to be the closer really early and have tons of shares. And so I'm patting myself on the back real quick, but I do not like Kyle Finnegan that much. Canley, you know, change up after change up after change up, I think gets you in trouble. Is he hurt right now? And Rafael Montero is not a guy I would have picked up. So, like, if you're telling me what number pitcher is he in the bullpen? I'm like, he's your third best pitcher in the bullpen, maybe second. Maybe first.
And he's your third best pitcher.
And if you're talking about being in the starting rotation, like, I'd be like, well, he's probably like your second or third best starter. So
yeah, right.
So, like, that reality is going to hit their manager, but he's also going to have, like, hey, you have like 20 innings to play with here. So it's going to be hard for us also to, like, watch Troy Melton over the next month and 2 months, basically. And, you know, learn that much about the future, because we need to learn about him as a starter. And I think they're going to lean into him as a reliever. This might be this. I could be wrong, but I could call this as, like, maybe his last start of the year.
So, I mean, yeah, it was treated like a spot starter. They wanted to give Tarek Skubal, I think, some extra rest. I am actually selfishly hoping that we don't see Troy Melton in the playoffs as a starter and barely as a reliever, because the thing called the playoff tax exists. And I just want, let us just have,
we want a healthy guy next year.
Yeah, we want that too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting. I'm still on the Sawyer Gibson Long train. It's just, I was a year early. Okay. You know, so I will be there next year. Troy Melton and Sawyer Gibson Long. Absolutely.
Well, they have a lot of rentals in that rotation. So,
that's right.
It's Flaherty possible that as well. Flaherty, Paddock, and Morton are all gone, and Cobb. So, they're going to eat Gibson Long and Melton in that rotation. So, yeah, it is a weird thing where, like, the needs of the organization may not align with our needs. And so boo them.
Yeah. So by the way, it was a shoulder strain for Reese Olson. If you're wondering that, everyone, he could be back next year, theoretically, at least they were in the season. So we'll see.
I don't think they were talking about, like, labrum surgery just yet. That's when you
get scared. And how it is Woodruff doing this is just unbelievable. I can't. It's what a good story. But
we were talking today on Rates and Barrels a little bit about, you know, that ramp up, and we were thinking back to, like, you know, Strider, did he come up too early, or should he stay in the minor leagues longer? You know, and at the time we were like, he looks ready. He's throwing hard. Why are you using 80 pitch outings in the minors when you could use those in the majors? You need those in the majors.
Right.
But Strider's, you know, season hasn't been that great. And Woodruff is a foil to that, where he was in the minors so long, we thought maybe this isn't going well. Like, maybe this is a problem, but maybe they just really wanted to slow walk his return.
Well, I mean, he should have slow walked on his ankle. And that's, you know, that stopped his return. He was like a couple days away from making his return. Then he hurt his ankle. Okay.
But there was also just like, even before that, he had like 6 starts or something, you know?
I remember he did also mention, I mean, Woodruff has talked about his long rehab as a blessing, and also said, I'm really happy I hurt my ankle, because it gave me more time to actually ramp up even further and be back in a better place. So, yeah, it's fascinating there.
He also hasn't come back as, like, if there's somebody to watch too, I'm interested to watch if he keeps up this command, and, like, he didn't come back as necessarily the same guy. Like, he's not the same guy he used to be.
He's always been weird to me too. Just a little strange of, like, this shouldn't be as good as it is. Sometimes we just get that with players and I'm like, fine, just okay. You just do whatever. And I just think you're very good.
I think, you know, his fastballs are really interesting because you can just look at a plot on Savant and you're like, he has a four seam and a sinker that if you added them together would just be an average four seam.
Right.
But instead the four seam is nowhere near average and the sinker is nowhere near average. Now the sinker has more ride than average. And the four seam has more cut than average. So I think he's just weird. I think it is. Yeah. I think it is just weird. And then I think on top of it, what he's doing now is just showing great command.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's been a backbone of Woodruff's success.
There are breaking balls that he used to throw. He's not throwing at all, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he used to throw an 87 mile an hour gyro slider 10% of the time.
Yeah.
He hasn't thrown one this year.
Ooh, that's interesting.
So, he's come back kind of as like a weird three fastball guy with a great change. I think he might also just be like a secret pronator. That his breaking balls were never as good as we thought they were. They were just kind of hard.
Yeah.
And so now he's leaning into the change in the three fastballs, and it's just built on command.
Right. Right.
You know? And I believe he had good command before, so I kind of believe that he has command, but you know, like a 97 stuff plus, you know, with a 35% strikeout rate built on command, like, and then you watch a game and the announcers will be like, and it was another fastball. And they're like, this guy's just throwing fastballs. They're like, you know what you're gonna get with Woodruff? Heaters. Yeah.
It's like him and Ryan Nelson.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, is it really going to work? But the Brewers have done. Back to our conversation about what different teams do. The Brewers seem to be really into the three fastball thing too. Chad Patrick, three fastballs. Oh, yeah. You know, like they brought guys up with a lot of fastballs. So I think they like that too.
I mean, Quinn Priester, sinker cutter, became a huge thing with him. But we got some other guys to talk about here, and including Ryan Nelson. And we're going to talk about them after this break. So I really do want to lean into, all right, there are certain guys that we think we might like and they might be better next year. I remember actually this time last season, we stared at each other and said, two guys, Bowden Francis and Ryan Nelson, how are they doing this? And Bowden Francis, I didn't really know. I didn't have an answer for you. Ryan Nelson at least said, hey, look, this four seamer is a high vert pitch. It is 95. He has, you know, everything is good enough that like this actually is a really surprising four seamer because it's not the
everything is good. Yeah, I know everything on the four seam is good.
Right.
Like it's a really, it's weird. It's like we're used to people like pitchers with like an elite slider, you know, making everything work around it. And this is the opposite. This is like, here's a guy with an elite fastball who has nothing else.
It's shocking how much he's tried. He literally has tried everything in here. Cutter, slider, curveball, change. We've seen them. And it's like every single start, he's like pulling the wheel, being like, no.
That's not working.
It's like four of each of them, you know? And it's just one of those things. Someday, something has to click. Something, maybe just throw the ball a little bit further back into your hand and that's a slower version of the fastball and that works or something. I don't know. But seeing Ryan Nelson seize the rotation spot for the second time once Jordan Montgomery didn't work out or whatever, do you have confidence that he will pick this up next year and have a number two pitch that is better than whatever he's throwing on a given night now?
No, I have no confidence.
So, but I mean, so then is it like this or is this the peak then for Ryan Nelson, your view? It sounds like you think it's the peak.
I mean, what's weird is like Stuff Plus likes to slide the last two games, but like I can't find a difference in it at all.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I got nothing for you there.
Like, could he throw this? I mean, I'm like, okay, if you don't have a good slider, throw it hard. Well, I mean, he's throwing at 86 and he had some games where it was throwing at 89, like, and also there's like at least a little bit of research that, you know, throwing a 90 mile slider is not that good for you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, you know, the difference between a slider and cutter. I remember we've talked about that before, the when do you add grains of sand to make it a heap kind of? Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes a lot of those 91 mile per hour sliders are really just cutters in disguise.
Mm-hmm. But he also throws the cutters.
Gyro slider. Then it's like, okay, that's a proper 91.
Has he tried a kick change yet?
Right. I don't know. It's just, all I want to do is just throw fastballs and then just slightly move the ball in your hand, just slightly, and just do everything the same way. Just slightly twist it here and there. I still have a very massive theory about, like, I think every single pitcher, what spring training should actually be, is you're forced to throw everything. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not actually just trying to do the same thing. Like, every pitcher is cool. You have to throw every, you have to have a day where it's literally like you are featuring this secondary this time. You know, and you're just trying this. You're just cool. Just experiment. And I think that it just kind of shocks me how little experimentation there is, at least to my knowledge. I see a lot of the same things over and over again that don't work. And I just have to believe it's possible to unlock more things.
But I also I feel like, you know, one thing about him is that, like, the bad games are sometimes they're predictable. Like, you wouldn't have started him this year at Cincinnati, and that's his worst start of the year. 3 innings, 7 earned runs. Mm-hmm. And maybe you wouldn't have started him in Chicago, where I don't even know if he was a starter back then, but he gave up 5 runs against the Cubs. So maybe if you avoided, like, at Cincinnati against the Cubs, but at Texas, his last start, right now, Texas is weirdly an extreme pitcher's park, and just kind of assumed that he would do well there, and he five innings, 5 earned runs. I think that there's just certain, you know, advanced matchup analysis might actually be better. You know, I think flat swings are better against guys with ride.
Oh yeah.
So yes. If you were like looking through a lineup and found a lot of people with like 30 degrees or less tilt on their swings in a lineup, especially with power, I think I would not start.
Wow, that's Nelson, fun. That makes all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of upset.
A lot of effort.
Think about that before. that's duh. That's like complete duh to me.
I've tried it. I've been using it a little bit on Pick Six, which is this auto new game where you just pick.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I was at the auto new meetup with a Niv week and a half ago. At the other half where we did the athletic event 2 years ago in Red Hook. Also, I think I sent you a video. Did you get the video that I took of David Appelman? Oh,
yes, but I didn't have the sound on because I was.
You didn't have the sound on?
I didn't have the sound on. So
Oh my gosh. All right.
I forgot about
it. Mute your mic for a moment. And everybody watching the video, you're going to see Eno's reaction to what this is, okay? This is a video I went to AutoNew, and one of the things about the difference between Fangraphs and pitcher list when it comes to swing strike rates is that we treat foul tips differently. Look at Eno. And they think that foul tips are foul balls, and I think foul tips are whiffs. So I finally sat down with David Appelman, and I just went point blank, like, what are you doing? And he finally admits, he goes, yeah, we should probably change it to be whiffs. And I stopped what I did, and I took out my phone, and I started recording.
Say it again.
Like, say that again. So what now, Eno?
All right. Maybe I'll concede it. I don't know.
You hadn't watched the video yet? Oh, my God.
I remember being like, oh, I got to remember to watch this later because I was somewhere where I couldn't have.
Oh, you were at like a concert or something like that. That's right.
Yeah, I think I was. I was at a concert.
Oh, man, do you see? He's just like, all right, yep, we should change it.
He really was. That's funny.
All right, so you're welcome, everyone. Consistency. You're going to see a lot of swing strike rates just increase a little bit. You're gonna be like, I thought it was 13.5%, not 14.2. But yeah, there's, you know, just be on the lookout for that one. It's going to be a good time.
But the batter made contact.
But it doesn't, for the purpose of everything, it's like either you do it in a way that's a traditional foul ball or hit, or it's not.
Yeah, but I don't tend to think about that sort of thing in terms of results on the field. I tend to think about that sort of thing in terms of models and physics of hitting. And so I would be like, they missed the ball.
Right. That's so what matters. So I guess what I'm getting at is,
that person.
Let's say we have .0. .0 is where the ball is either foul and like definitively foul or in play, right?
Yeah, right. There's a gray area in between where it's like,
and it's just like, okay, how far away you get from that, you know, does it matter if it's a tip or if it's a whiff or not? It doesn't matter. The only thing that really matters there is that it's actually like put into play in some kind, you know?
Like there's no chance. There's no chance that's good contact.
Right. Zero.
Right.
All because right. It literally just keeps going.
Right.
It's like it's a hole in the back.
Ball flight at all. Yeah. You know? Right.
It's literally like what I do when I walk by dogs on the street, where like I just do like a drive-by pet, you know, I put up my hand and I'm just like, hey, what's up? But I'm still going.
The foul tip of highs to
catch. Yeah, there dogs. It is. That's it. okay. I got to bring up one other guy here. I'm going to do a very quick rant on Bailey Falter because I found out today that Bailey Falter is moving to the pen with Michael Lorenzen coming back. Something that Bailey Falter did for two starts was had one game where he's like, I'm just going to throw a lot of sliders right now, see if that works. Then he threw 44% more curves than any other pitch.
Then he threw 36% curves the next game.
Right, which is awesome because Bailey Falter is an acquisition by the Royals, not for this year, but for next year. They say, great, we're going to need a spot in the rotation. We want it to be Bailey Falter, so we're going to get him now and not deal with this in the offseason. I don't have to think about any of that. So let's give him some starts now to make sure he can figure things out. And
he threw that curve a lot. It was also the hardest he'd thrown it all year.
Right, he's experimenting. And actually, I was wondering a little bit, like, is it the slider a little bit, though, still? Is it, like, kind of a merge of the two? Maybe slightly. Yeah, but slider's he's experimenting. He's what yeah. It's what a lot of pitchers should be doing. And I it goes back to the other thing.
I guess this is why they sent him down, is because,
to the bullpen.
Well, to the bullpen. Yeah, that's weird.
Not to the minors. So he's not starting. It's not like he's on an innings limit or something like that. Like, no, he's totally within the realms of what he should be doing. And
his fastball is clearly his best pitch.
100%. And he's not throwing as much because he should be trying to find number two, right? Yeah. Like, who cares about these games right now? Let's make you as good as we can for 2026. And not enough players get to do that because they're fighting for tomorrow so often, right? So this is the perfect scenario. You go to Bailey Falter and say, hey, man, we just want you to do this. Great. You know what? Never mind. Let's let the one-year rental of Lorenzen get starts right now instead, and then just not let him develop fully.
They're trying to stay in the race.
What race?
I mean, yeah, they're 7 games back
from the third wild card spot.
No, four games back.
Okay, with how many teams fighting for it?
They're behind teams that are not in the wild card. They're behind two teams that are not in the wild card.
Okay. So
I don't know. It's like, it's close enough that I guess.
Is
but
the Lorenzen giving you that much more of a chance?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
You know, I don't know. It drives me wild. And the thing is, the Bailey Falter thing was a joke. A bit of like, okay, it's the Rays. I said it once, and I'm just going to keep saying it forever. And I'll still say 93-94 with really good extension. And that's such a good baseline. And it's like the Ryan Nelson problem of like, you just got to find something else here. And hopefully you find it. And that might be kind of cool when it does. But you got to give him an opportunity to do that. And I'll always be upset at starters I feel are not getting the opportunity to be their best selves that deserve it. So that's a Bailey Falter rant. But...
I have a happier rant if we want to conclude on a veteran that could be affecting his draft stock next year. I've had people ask me if my daughter married Dylan Cease or something because I've kept him at the top of the rankings because strikeout minus walk rate predicted somebody that would have like a 3.40 ERA. It's been like a top 20 strikeout minus walk rate. The stuff plus is good. But my faith had been being questioned recently because he'd been such a two pitch starter that I was like, oh, maybe he's just, and I'd been watching a lot of Padres games because the family, the kids are into the Padres. And so, I was like, oh, it just always falls apart in like the fifth inning. And it's always somebody just locking in on one of his pitches in one location and like hitting a homer or, right. or just spitting on everything and he's walking them. Right.
Right.
And we know that the latter is part of it, that he'll walk guys. And I think that's what he's been afraid of in the past in not throwing the sinker as much and not throwing the change and the knuckle curve as much. I think he's been focused on pitches he can throw in the zone, but mm-hmm. he's been easier to keyhole. So in the last three, this has definitely been going on since the All-Star break, but in the last three starts, he's been 36% fastball. Dylan Cease has 10% sinker, 38% slider, and 17% knuckle curve. And, you know, it's not necessarily optimizing by Stuff Plus because doesn't really love his knuckle curve these days. And he could be maybe more optimized by just being fastball slider, but he'd be more of a reliever if he was doing that.
Yeah.
So I like this new mix. And I've watched him do things that I'd never seen him do ever. Like I was watching a game where he tripled up on the knuckle curve and I was just like, wow, like what? Like he has maybe he did that in like his rookie or sophomore year, but like since then he's really not used the knuckle curve the same way. So to triple up on the knuckle curve, I'm sure the hitter's like, now comes the slider. Okay, now comes the slider, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think he's playing around with people's expectations. And I bet you he gets a pretty big deal. I bet you he gets a deal that surprises the people that are still using ERA, you know, as their primary way in. I think he's going to be good down the zone. And I think he'll be their ace because Michael King hasn't, you know, Michael King has to have a lot of feel on his pitches and he's trying to come back from injury at the same time.
Yeah. I didn't hear you there, by the way. How many cutters did he throw?
Zero.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. He never went that direction.
Well, he did. He had like experimentation of like two or three and he would always use it trying to be that perfect up and in cutter.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is the guys, as you mentioned, would keyhole in on four seamers. So when he'd be getting the cutter, it kind of would help them at times of like when you would think it would be the four seamer, but then they wouldn't get
it's
on top
a
of
bit,
it.
It's a little bit more hitter. Isn't it easier to hit?
Yeah, right.
It's a little bit lower.
So I've been yelling that like, it's not supposed to be that. It's supposed to be like down and away. It's supposed to be like the Corbin Burns backdoor cutter.
Get a called strike. Get a
right.
Strike.
Just like this should be your called strike safety net. You know, because
throw it like just away, because maybe he doesn't have enough cannon to be just down, but anywhere away where they think it's a sprayed fastball,
right?
Comes back into the strike zone,
or it's
like basically he needs more called strikes because
yes,
he gets swinging strikes. He needs
all the time.
He needs to think about called strikes,
and
that's where the sinker and curve can do something similar, though, right?
I've been
because he's hoping they take it for a strike.
But I mean, I was going. What's also really weird, actually, is that this year for Dylan Cease, lefties he's executed better against the lefties than righties, which is so strange like for a four-seamer slider guy.
Yeah, that means he's probably executing better to his glove side for some reason.
Right. And it wasn't always the case. It was the opposite before, which is why I saw when he was experimenting with a sweeper and the sinker, I was like, what are you doing? That's not your problem. Like, your problem is not right-handers, it's left-handers. And that's why I've been yelling about the cutter. I still feel that the curve, which I'm with you, I love the fact that you tripled up. That's insane.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a 60-65% strike pitch likely. Like it's always been too big to succeed as opposed to too big to fail. Like Giolito's big one from that was, oh my gosh, so great, but you can't do much with it. And also we've seen that the bigger the curveball, the less likely guys are to swing. Which means that you have to throw it in the zone. Then
you're
not going to get the whiffs on it, right? So I just, where is the cutter, man? Where is it, by the way?
I think that sometimes, you know, this is something that like Strider said to me. I think that pitchers are, you know, really fascinated with and optimized for the swinging strike. That's what they want. That's right. Like, I beat you. I threw it and I beat you, you know?
Yeah.
But the called strike, and like when you talk to guys who are, you know, a little bit more in the thrower, you know, pitcher versus thrower, like the more pitchers, they'll talk about like, oh, like you can throw a pitch that looks really bad that they're just going to be so early on and possibly early on. And you just foul ball. Hey, that's a strike. Thanks.
Lay off fastballs. It's what I threw in high school. My senior year of high school, I think the best game I ever pitched was five innings when I should have gone seven, but it was like the first day of spring ball against like one of the top rated high schools. I didn't even know it was. And I was throwing like 80, 81 at the time, something like that at my peak. But I was throwing four seamers, or actually sinkers, at like from 74 to 81. I would do layoff fastballs whenever I'd get behind in like 2-1 or something like that. I would just
throw like a 74 mile an hour fastball.
Yeah. And like they would roll over it and hit ground balls, and, you know, and I would get outs.
Cause they'd be a little bit too far out in front. Cause they'd be primed to your 78. And this 80. Is what
Tom Glavine would do. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where I learned that from. And I unfortunately did a layoff fastball at 2-1 to Dylan Betances at the end of the year, who hit 400 feet over the last 10 feet of the wall. When my catcher came out and said, "Wow," you know, I finally got to tell Dylan Betances earlier this year. Oh my gosh, I finally told
Eric,
him.
Like, Eric, never, Eric wasn't actually your catcher. He was
at Packer, the rival high school.
Oh, okay.
He's also like 4 years older than me, 5 years older than me.
Oh, okay. I like the story better if it's Eric going.
Yeah. Wow. I do too. I mean, Eric would not have let me do that. I'll tell you that. But no, the layoff fastball is actually a dying art. And
Lance Lynn used to definitely throw it. Yeah.
It really is a super effective thing. And like, it's really hard to teach someone, hey, throw this like 85-90% as opposed to 95-100% now, right?
I think to some extent, the multiple fastball thing is sort of giving people cover for the layoff fastball.
That's a great point. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, just throw your sinker, and you're not like with the sinker, you're not going to be like, if you're a four seam guy, it's not going to be as comfortable. You're going to sort of lay it in there, but you're going to rely on the shape being so different that the hitter's like, what's that?
Right.
You know?
Oh, it needs to come back in a big way. And yeah, as you see, of course, with the guys who are the pitchers instead of the throwers, they're very much of like, yeah, how do I throw that first pitch curveball for a strike? Mm-hmm. How do I get in there? You know, this is what David Cohn would throw, like 68 mile per hour curves in there. Just like, oh my gosh, I really did this and it worked.
I think you're even seeing it from like Robbie Ray, you know, and like,
yeah,
you know, these are guys that I've had discussions about where I've been like, you know, adding a pitch, you know, softens their third time through the order penalty. And they've both been like, yeah, but I want to throw pitches that dominate, you know, and you're like, well, you know, but you know, like with like Robbie Ray, he's throwing like the changeup and the curve, and he's like throwing one of his widest mixes he ever thrown. Now Cease is getting there. So I think and if you age fastball usage, if you look at aging curves of fastball usage, it just goes down. So
to
some extent, I think the league teaches you how to do this.
And that's like, why it's like,
oh, my fastball's so dominant. And they're like, not as dominant as it used to be.
It's why we love guys like Zebby Matthews and Troy Melton, guys, because they do have the wide arsenal from the get-go.
Yeah.
And the last one I do want to mention is going to get to him finally. Cade Cavalli, how do you feel about him so far after two starts? What we've seen is 97, 98 mile per hour fastballs. Not good shape. It's kind of empty velocity, as I like to say, of just the velocity and everything else is like, eh. And then you have this curveball that I want to say it's the debut, but it's not because he made that one start in 2022. He had an 89 mile per hour curve that is one of the prettiest pitches. A hard curve like that is just gorgeous. It's like snaps to the glove.
Oh my God. Like the Kimbrel power curve.
Yeah.
Early Lance McCullers curve.
Yordano Ventura.
Oh God.
Oh man. They were so good. And this one, I mean, it's averaging 85, 86. And in the last start, it was a 41% strike rate as opposed to like the 60% plus of the previous one. And that was really his downfall.
It's really 12 to 6 too. It's not a lot of sideways.
It's gorgeous. And the thing is, all right, outside of that curve, is the changeup good enough? The fastball can't really survive on its own. Do you feel that Cade Cavalli is going to adapt with the Nationals and is someone that not only, let alone a 2026, but just even the rest of August and September is someone we should keep an eye on?
I think you're right to highlight, you know, the cutter, the slider, the change, like his worst pitches. Like, you know, he's thrown, you know, maybe with like
there was
10 combined cutters.
Yeah, there were two cutters that were like, well, maybe that's it in his last start. We'll see about that.
Scott Plus loves the cut, likes the cutter best.
Yeah.
Although it liked the change in the debut. So
mm.
the other thing that I have circled for Cavalli is the minors, he had a 95 location plus. Mm-hmm. Last year, he had a 93 location plus. By the prospects report at Fangraphs, though, that might be an error. That's weird. He had 56 present, 50 future command. I've never seen a six before. That's weird. Anyway, I'm going to read that as like a 50 command. So there are some questions about command in the two games this year. The first location plus was 108, and I was like, oh, really? 97 with location.
What?
Like maybe he cleaned up. I was like, maybe he cleaned everything up.
Yeah.
But then it was 86 location plus against the Royals.
He looked violent in his pitches. It looked like big max effort, lots of moving parts. I'm surprised to hear the 108, because watching it, it felt like, oh, you don't quite know where it's going. It's kind of getting around there, but like it's shifting here and there, you know.
So that just puts a lot of pressure. If the walk rate's going to be high and the command's not going to be great, and he pitches in a park where you can give up homers,
mm-hmm.
and he's pitching in front of a bad defense, like what you kind of need out of Cade Gavalli is like a 27, 28% strikeout rate.
Yeah.
So
and he could theoretically with the curveball, if it is super legit,
that good, right? And the curveball could be a platoon neutral.
Yeah, because definitely
that kind of power curveball is platoon neutral. So maybe the slider and change don't matter as much. Maybe the real big thing is command. Maybe that's the real big thing. Can he keep it to a 9% walk rate, a one homer per nine? If you can, then he could be breakout. I think he is. I'd almost want him to struggle so that like I could get him as like a deep league sleeper and like a you know, a late round flyer.
I don't think he's going to do that well. At least for this year. And I would imagine having full health finally for the first time in ages, you're going to see some sort of development and polish by the time he gets to
any improvement in command next spring, over the course of this, that's what I'd be looking for. And if I see something, I'm going to have some shares because I do love the velo and the curveball. That's a pretty good.
I think this is the greatest CC we've ever seen in baseball, honestly.
True. Not the guy in the hall.
Oh, I love Sabathia so much. Oh my gosh. He is someone on the very short list of people that I would do a podcast with. Any day, but absolutely. I'm just kidding. I would do a podcast with so many people. I'm just kidding.
I'm sitting right here.
Yeah, no. I'm already doing one with you. You know, I'm already doing. You were the top of the short list. Okay. But the last thing about Cade Gavalli is that the Nationals, I don't have too much faith in. So like this would be something that
bringing
would be,
it full circle now. It's how do we feel about the organization?
I don't feel
what, how quickly can they turn it around? I mean, Rizzo's gone, you know, that doesn't mean that the people that were in charge of pitching development are necessarily gone, but they're going to be making changes. And the next person who comes in is probably going to be a guy who sells them on pitching, on player development. And
I would
and
love to know what Doolittle's experience has been. Cause like I have faith in him.
Right.
But
he's kind of like getting information to major league pitchers. So,
right. So he's passing it along.
That's like almost like the final piece of the puzzle. Like we need to know, like, what does a rehab coordinator look like? And what does their biomechanics guy look like? And what is their, you know, single A pitching coach telling their people?
Yeah. Well, that's, I can't believe I'm surprised there isn't like a player that says, all right, I'll sign with you, but only if you give X amount of dollars to your minor league system.
You can only spend on pitching coaches.
Because I will be here, but I need to know that you are developing talent to make sure that this is worth my time.
Yeah, right.
You know? I'm just saying, like, you do Juan Soto at $750 million, but just saying, you know what? Let's just give $30 million towards that.
Yeah, $200,000.
Like, you'll be happier, Juan. Trust me.
Yeah.
All right. On that point, I know I'm ending with a hitter. I can't believe it. The last name I said was a hitter. So, Spencer Arrighetti. Anyway, so
just gonna say it.
That's gonna do for this episode.
And then later,
I just got to make sure. I'm Spencer Arrighetti. I'm still very much in on the five walks. Doesn't matter. I think he's very good. There's so many other guys I want to talk about. We'll have to save it for next week. You know, thank you so much for joining me on this one. I look forward to your rankings. We'll obviously have a discussion about those when those come out. But that is it for today. So my name is Nick Pollock. And may you listen again next week. We talk about the craft of pitching.
You landed that plane.